Hawking, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go at a minute past the hour, a minute past 6 p.m. in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone on this, the 6th day of June 2016, the anniversary, of course, of the D-Day invasion of the European mainland in 1944, the beginning of the end of the Third Reich and its, well, the hell on earth, the miseries that it heaped upon Europe. First things first, birthday greetings going out to longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Lottie. Happy birthday, Lottie. Hope you spent it in enjoyable fashion and maybe had something delicious to mark the occasion, with which to mark the occasion, yes. Mm-hmm. And let's see, also, of course, well, if you'd like to be part of the Horn chat room, it's free, it's easy. Everything on the Horn is free. We never send a bill to anybody. And if you'd like to participate in the madcap merriment, the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, run on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and jump right in, and you will be in the thick of things. This evening, getting us started early, folks wandering into the chat room for the very beginning of the program, even. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Little Gray and Snork Y2K and Tim from LA. And yes, yes, all capably under the observation and moderation of longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, who, though being a third stage guild navigator, has chosen to keep space unfolded there at the chat room command center. In the air-conditioned part of the of Compound Sparky, as opposed to the blast furnace that the man cave presently is. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thank you. Tim. Tim from L.A. Who are you? Yeah. Well, I am. And yay. Yes, the signal is reaching. It's going out around the planet and off to our dear friends, some thousands of years hence, on Norblap 9. Norblap. And the feeling is mutual. Yes. So it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Oh, by the way, this part too. You know, this is like a catechism. After a while, you guys can repeat it as well as I can. It's probably already happening in your head, as a matter of fact. This program survives on listener contributions. As I said before, we've never sent a bill, and we never will. The podcasts are free. The access to the stream is free. We put it on in as many places as we can for free. If you happen to listen on a different platform and you get an ad for, say, ExxonMobil or something, please believe me when I say we are not getting a check for that. No one pays the Horn for the right to carry our programming on any of their platforms, no matter what nor where they are. So that leaves us with listener contributions. And on this sixth day of June, 2016, I am proud to announce there is a challenge on the table. And this is an important challenge because if it's met, it will help defray costs of an absence come Friday. And this is a program note. There will be no program, I'm almost 100% certain, no program on Friday, the 10th day of June, because I'm going to be busy down in Charleston being a delegate to the West Virginia Democratic Convention. Yes. And that also continues on to Saturday, but I don't have to worry about that because, well, you know, it's Saturday. So what I'm thinking with Sparky's kind indulgence, I'm thinking maybe on Thursday the 9th we will have the Thursday on the front porch, thorn in the side thing. Maybe. Okay? But anyway, I have to be gone on Friday, so that means... But fortunately, Chris in Germany has most kindly provided a challenge with which to begin this week. And Chris has put $300 on the table to match the next 300 that come in, so that your 5 becomes 10, your 10 becomes, heck, your 300 would become 6. So it's all there, and, you know, with us trying to raise $200 a night, well, you see how it all works out. But, yeah, your 5 becomes 10, your 10, 20, your 3, 6, your 100 becomes 200, up to the first $300 that come in. If you want to participate, of course, go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the tab called Contribute. And that's the PayPal interface, and you put in your name and the basic information. It's all for PayPal. It's not for us, and we do not want to know, even though PayPal included it in their stupid form, we do not want to know what you do for Fred Sanford over there at Sanford & Sons, the scrap and junk. Not just leave that blank and get to the next screen, because it's all about getting to the next screen, and that's where you choose, you know, PayPal account, American Express, MasterCard, Visa, Discover, etc. If you prefer the United States mail, then you can send a check or a money order to The Horn, made payable that way too, not to Bob Kincaid. I never see him. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Again, made payable to The Horn, and preferably not cash, because remember, when Boss Man Wayne goes to the mailbox there at the UPS store, it's a mailbox that it's a location, not the mailbox, but the location is one we also share with the Klan. Because the United Parcel Service seems to think that the Klan, an American domestic terrorism organization, has a right to a mailbox at the UPS store, too. So if you send me a note, I'll tell Boss Man Wayne he can leave his spider-proof gloves in the truck and only has to take his Louisville Slugger with him in case he runs into a Klan member. He's got a pretty swing, Boss Man Wayne does. It's kind of reminiscent of that choppy swing that Pete Rose used to have. Yeah, but anyway, that's how that all works. So good, there is a matching challenge, as I said, up to $300 on the table, and the first $50 of matching has already been taken up anonymously. Yes, A Nani Moose. Has contributed so that we've got $250 left to go in fundraising. And thank you very kindly, Mr. or Ms. Moose. Yes. I have no idea why the chat room topic this evening has just been changed to Lottie's dinner is trembling and petrified in fear. I guess maybe that's because... birthday dinner, something? I don't know. Yeah. So it is. Oh my God. It is. It's Moore and Monday on the horn. It is so Moore and Monday on the horn.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons. You've got to remember that these are just simple.
Oh, wrong button. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. This being radio, your eyes will not be necessary. It's Moore and Monday on the horn. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Just step off the carnival midway, just a few bare or shod feet away from all the games, all the fun, all the thrills, and come over here to the most bizarre portion of the entire carnival. That's right. That's right. It's Moore and Monday in the Moore and Monday tent. Oh, my goodness gracious, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, mamas and daddies, kids and cousins will all be amazed by what is to be heard behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. They're all here. Right-wing morons, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, booger eaters, birchers, libertarians, re-piglickins, and the occasional misguided other somebody. It's all here. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. Yes, for subscribers to the program at $10 a month, it works out to something on the order of less than 17 cents per hour of programming. Or maybe that's for everybody. I don't know. I'm just the barker. I don't do the math. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. We a little warning going out to anyone coming behind, going through the tent flaps here, to keep a close hand on children, small animals, that iguana that you won down the midway and now don't really know what to do with. Keep a close hand. Keep a close eye on them. Keep an eye on your spouse, your friend, your neighbor. Keep an eye on your purse, your wallet, and the European style messenger bags. Because the morons can get grabby. Oh my, oh my. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons. Oh, oh, brothers and sisters. There is nothing quite like the passing of a great black man to bring out the morons from behind the baseboards and up through the cracks in the flooring material. No, really. This is a special level of stupid that obtains in such moments, and of course it rushed right out. There was just an outpouring of filth. In the instant that Muhammad Ali passed away. You know, some deaths leave us a little bit more distraught, a little bit more shaken than others. Muhammad Ali had lived in a prison whose bars were built of the mystery that is Parkinson's disease for decades. And that was a part that didn't just happen. As we know now, blows to the head, head injuries, almost blaze a trail straight to Parkinson's disease. But that didn't matter. That absolutely did not matter to the white wingers out there. And, dear God, we are once again reminded how many there are in our ongoing study of asshole America. Well, nothing proves the thesis quite like the passing of a great black man. Dear heavenly days. It started and it didn't. It really. Well, I don't know if it's let up yet. People seem in a hurry to embarrass themselves over a situation like this. Oh, let's see. T-Bog over at Raw Story sampled a soup song of the right-wing response. For those mourning, just know that Muhammad Ali is in muzzy heaven banging his 72 virgins. Good riddance to draft-dodging coward Muslim traitor Muhammad Ali. I hope his 72 virgins are Steve Carell. Ah, see, working a gay joke in there with a little bit of anti-Muslim racist bigotry. And stop praising Muhammad Ali. He was no hero. And don't back down when liberals call you a racist or an Islamophobe for telling the truth. No, Muhammad Ali isn't the greatest sportsman ever. He's a dribbling, racist, sexist, draft-dodging, anti-Semite. Fuck him. What more is there to say about this than, you know, assholes? These are the assholes who make up, you know, asshole America. This is why we can't have nice things. So the world is sad because a black Muslim racist is dead? Why? Did you know KKK admired Muhammad Ali for being against interracial relations? And then there's always the sad fundamentalist Christian. Muhammad Ali died as a Muslim without the blood of Christ. We should be reminded that the rich and famous need Jesus too. Very, very sad. Well, I got a feeling Muhammad Ali is doing just fine. You can kind of, if you fancy to imagine the already imaginary heaven and hell, can't you just see St. Peter going, no, really, I mean, are you as quick? I mean, you, what? Oh, he is fast. But the thing about the passing of Muhammad Ali, it was expected. We've been expecting it for years, if not decades. Is that, in a way, it was like a little bit of time travel. Because suddenly we were thrust back into the conflicts that roiled this country in the 1960s as we confronted what we were doing in Vietnam. I, of course, was busy being a very small child. But Muhammad Ali, having had his religious conversion to the Nation of Islam, having changed his name from Cassius Marcellus Clay, which in itself is a pretty special name in Kentucky, Cassius Clay. Cassius Clay having been a man who struggled there in the belly of the slave-holding South beast for the dignity of all people, of all hues of skin. And you know, even that phrase is one of those things that you just know that the six-legged race of sentient cockroaches are going, wait, they killed each other and tormented each other over their skin color? But they had such beautiful garbage! Yeah. But when he changed his name from Cassius Marcellus Clay to Muhammad Ali, and said that Cassius Marcellus Clay was in fact his slave name, and that he would no longer be associated with it, that in itself roiled the delicate sensibilities. Yeah, too sensitive of white, terrified America. But then when he said that he wouldn't do what Elvis done and let Uncle Sam draft him into the military, because, you know, I don't think that they would have let Muhammad Ali marry the base commander's daughter like they done with Elvis. But, you know, also we were pretty, well, never mind. When he said he wouldn't go in the draft, and when he said that his reason for that was because ain't no Viet Cong never called me nigger. Well, a lot of white wing America just lost its shit. And so we went back to all of that with his passing. Now, it turns out, because by living to the ripe old age of 74, which now among some people is deemed to be really not that old, by living to 74, he got to live to see the judgment of history upon his actions and the actions of others. And history came down on the side of Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali was right, and Richard Nixon was wrong. Muhammad Ali was right, and Lyndon Johnson was wrong. Muhammad Ali was right and Robert McNamara was wrong. Muhammad Ali was right and Spiro Agnew was wrong. Mm-hmm. Muhammad Ali said no, he would not flee to Canada to evade the draft, that he would stand and take his lumps because this was, by God, his country. And that made him far more than people who are still alive and have had access to far more power, a real patriot. And in particular, and I guess it's because I've got this fixation going on, because I really want the man at some point in time to pay on earth for the crimes that the many and manifest and myriad crimes that he has committed, crimes against humanity, war crimes, things that got other people taken to the gallows. I thought of Henry Kissinger. Muhammad Ali dead at 74, and Henry Kissinger still alive and probably vacationing with the Clintons again in the Dominican Republic this coming Christmas. I thought of Henry Kissinger. And that, in turn, occasioned me thinking about the human condition, the human experience generally. It's safe to say that most of us, in spending our time on the planet, will make no great impact upon human civilization as a whole. We will participate in our days and our roads, and we will try to be decent people in our own right, decent people to the people among us. I try to not be shitty to people. I try to have a smile and a kind word for whomever I run across. Don't always succeed, but I do try. And that is probably the operating philosophy of 99.9% of the people on this planet. Now, of the asshats and knuckle draggers who leapt to their keyboards, 99% of them, in criticizing Muhammad Ali, probably never served a day in their lives in the military either. If you want to talk about people who refused the draft, and you take Muhammad Ali and you set him there, well, then you got Richard B. Dick before he dicks you big time, Cheney. You got William Jefferson Clinton. You got dim leader George W. Bush, AWOL from the Texas Air National Guard that his daddy got him into to save him from the swamps of Vietnam in the first place, but he couldn't even be bothered to show up for that. You got Dan Quayle, who got himself a cushy National Guard billet instead of having to go to Vietnam. And you got Bishop Willard Romney, who was peddling madly around Paris, defending Les Parisiens from the vicissitudes of the VC there aboard his trusty Mormon bicycle. And then you got Donald T. Rumpusaurus, who, again, being a wealthy and connected young white male, used the power of his daddy's purse to avoid the draft man. And, of course, from 1969 onward, great swaths of the hell on earth that we opened in Vietnam was being directed, orchestrated, if you will, by Henry Kissinger. And so we can compare the world value, the life value of Muhammad Ali to some of those people I just named. You know, it takes a lot on a relative scale to rise from the generally what we can generally say, most of us, the life we live in being an anonymous member of the human population of the planet. It takes a lot to rise above that, and in many cases, the people who do rise above that do so because we find out to our chagrin that the world would have been a better place by far had that person never existed. When you pick up the morning paper and you find out that some guy who just, he's a greeter at Wally World or he changed your oil at the Jiffy Lube or whatever, and you find out one morning that, you know, he's been keeping women in a pit, or that he murdered his family in their sleep with his Freedom Protector. That's the kind of thing, that notoriety that raises us up above the mundane and day to day, and it's a hell of a thing. Other people, though, it's an easier judgment to make because the amount of evil that they have perpetrated is almost without limit. I think of draft dodger Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he dicks you. I think of Henry Kissinger. On that great getting up morning, when we all get up and we pick up the newspaper, or more accurately, turn on the computer, and we see the headline, Kissinger dead, probably at 99, and still spinning his spider's webs of deceit, betrayal, and murder. Is there anybody within the sound of my voice who will not, upon seeing that headline, say, and how much better for humanity had he never lived at all? How about Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney and his five deferments before he dicks you? Is there anything that he has done in his long life, first with his own heart and then with some decent human being's heart beating away in his chest? Is there anything he's done that says the world is a better place for having had him in it? Because I actually went and I made an earnest search trying to answer that question. And what I got back out of the Uniblab 10,000 was, no. And, you know, this isn't the plot to It's a Wonderful Life, where George finds out what a sad and sorry place Bedford Falls would have become had he never been born. Zuzu petals. Yeah. Mary? I don't think that America would have turned into Potter's Field without Dick Cheney. Is there anybody out there who can say that humanity would not have been better off had George W. Bush ever been born? Perhaps had his some slightly elder sibling survived and he had died in infancy. This is not offered up as mean-spiritedness, but as a contemplation of the human condition. Most of us will spend our lives here on Earth, and it'll be a wash. Humanity was neither better nor worse for our having been here. But some people, imbued with ambition and avarice, will leave no doubt that the world would have been and humanity would have been a better place had they never been born. And of people in the United States of America, the top of that list of those now living has to be Henry Kissinger. Mentor to one of the likely two presidential party nominees. Without wandering off into the swamp, because I'm trying to stay out of it, although it's more in Monday and we may find ourselves inexorably drawn there too. You and I, with reasonably well-developed senses of morality and ethics, a question for later. Answer it by email, answer it by tweet, answer it by phone, however you wish, answer it in the chat room. And I don't think it's because, you know, we're members of the hoi polloi and don't know which fork to use with the peasant under glass. How many of us, if any, could in good conscience sit down at a Christmas feast with Henry Kissinger and Mrs. Kissinger? Jesus Christ, now there's an inquiry for the rest of the evening. Mrs. Kissinger. What kind of beast do you have to be to marry Henry Kissinger? What kind of beast do you have to be at that Christmas dinner table with Henry Kissinger? I mean, if this world operated on a different set of principles and physics and the natural laws of the whatever, blood would run in great rivulets off of that dinner table for simply having Henry Kissinger at it. At the Christmas dinner table at the De La Renta House Mansion compound in the Dominican Republic every year, did they pray for the souls of the millions of dead killed at the behest of Henry Kissinger? Did they remember Laotians? Did they remember Cambodians and Vietnamese? Chileans and Argentinians? So I don't... And the catalyst for all of this thinking was the passing of Muhammad Ali. Because the scale falls in the other direction with Muhammad Ali. He did, in ways perhaps he never anticipated when young, change the world for good. Made it a better place than what he found it. Confronted bigotries. You know, as recently as our so-called post-9/11 world, someone asked Muhammad Ali how he felt about sharing a religion with the 9/11 hijackers. You know what his response was? He said, "How do you feel about sharing your religion with Hitler?" Which is apt and true. Muhammad Ali's funeral will be Wednesday in Louisville. His death occasioned a cry or a call for the removal of some Confederate asshole statue in Louisville to be replaced by a statue of Muhammad Ali. Absolutely apt and fitting. I don't believe in putting up statues to traitors, or maintaining them for that matter. He'll be buried on Wednesday. And, well, one of the things I thought upon hearing the news of his passing was, please, dear God, don't let any reporters ask either Trump or Clinton about Muhammad Ali's passing. Why? And that's just, you can't put a lot of content into a tweet. But I just had this nightmare vision. Well, one, of Trump saying something absolutely shitty, because he already had, it was a while back, and he said, "And why is it that there are," and I don't do a Trump, I may have to learn if he becomes president. There aren't any Muslim athletic heroes, are there? So we got that. And then, just because if she's not completely briefed and on script, awful things happen when Hillary Clinton opens her mouth from time to time. I was terrified that there would be something about how she knew how to handle men who go off the reservation, but that Muhammad Ali demanded we all get off the plantation. Ugh. So far, I haven't seen any of those, and I'm really, really happy about that. So, just something to ponder. Yeah, what do you want at the end of your roads and days? And what of a culture that cannot bring itself to speak truth about some people's ends of their roads and days? Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he dicks you. George W. Bush. Boils on the butt of mankind, but you won't see that on any big old for-profit headlines. On that beautiful morning when I wake up to find Henry Kissinger is dead. Now, it won't be a beautiful morning because He will have evaded punishment. There won't be any headlines noting that Henry Kissinger was the pus in the abscess under the boil on the butt of humanity that people like Cheney and Bush and Rumsfeld are. Particularly Cheney, because he was a protege, just as the likely Democratic nominee for president is a protege of Henry Kissinger. And for any, you know, for any offended Hilarians out there, I'm sorry, but these are facts. Come November, in all likelihood, we will be choosing between a racist, megalomaniacal, sociopathic monstrosity in T. Rumpusaurus Rex and a protege of Henry Kissinger in Hillary Clinton. And I have, because I've done the reading, I have no patience whatsoever for those people. Well, it was just something she said in a debate. No, it wasn't. Christmas, year after year after year, at the same table as Henry fucking Kissinger. Trading fun stories. And historical observations. I mean, who burns better, Henry? Laotians, Cambodians, or Vietnamese?
Valid is really a question of the length of the burning or the quality of the light.
So, I hope you'll forgive me that. That little... But I do. I think it's that meaning of life stuff. And since it is Moran Monday, I hope you won't mind if I offer up a quick nomination to the New York Times. Because the New York Times obituary, at least the first one that came out, was pretty disgusting. The obituary of Muhammad Ali. The first three paragraphs are pretty much the straight up facts that could be written by any first year journalism school kid. But then comes the editorialization. Ali was the most thrilling, if not the best, heavyweight ever, carrying into the ring a physically lyrical, unorthodox boxing style that fused speed, agility, and power more seamlessly than of any fighter before him. The most thrilling, if not the best, heavyweight ever? Okay, New York Times, I'm game. Who's your nominee for best heavyweight boxer ever? Let's see. He entertained as much with his mouth as with his fists, narrating his life with a patter of inventive doggerel. Me, we. Inventive doggerel? And I'm sorry. I wonder if it had been a white guy who improvised little rhyming couplets along the way, would they have called it inventive doggerel? Then they got around to mentioning his stand on the draft. And this moment, his conversion from Christianity to Islam and the changing of his, quote, slave, unquote, name Cassius Clay to one bestowed by the separatist black sect he joined, the lost found nation of Islam, were perceived as serious threats by the conservative establishment and noble acts of defiance by the liberal opposition. Why, within the terms of the New York Times style book, is slave, the word slave, in quotation marks? That's what he called it. But he said it was his slave name, so name should be in quotation marks too. There was something jarring about putting the word slave by itself in quotation marks. It means that journalistically, the author of this obit doesn't believe it. He became a critic of his country and a government target in 1966 with his declaration, "I ain't got nothing against them Viet Cong." Why, New York Times? Why can you not use that brutally honest assessment that Ali gave? I mean, would the lace doilies there in the penthouse of the New York Times building, would the lace doilies just simply unravel at the mere printing of that quote? Because that was the gist of it. I ain't got nothing against no Viet Cong. Well, that could arguably say, I mean, you know, there's an argument to be made there that maybe he was mistaken. Maybe we had something against those Viet Cong. Maybe the VC who were killing our young men, who disproportionately were being drafted out of certainly not the upper echelons of American society, to go and fight this war. But it only becomes clear the meaning of I ain't got nothing against no Viet Cong. The meaning of that only becomes clear with the follow-up. No Viet Cong ever called me nigger. And I'm not using that word for the gratuitous the shock value of it. I think you know that, and you know me long enough to know that. But that was the heart and the soul of it. No Viet Cong, he said, ever raped my mama. And continued in that vein, stole my history, denied my rights. But the precious little New York Times just sort of blows past that, saying that he had nothing against the Viet Cong. But Ali had his hypocrisies, or at least inconsistencies. Well, if they're inconsistencies, call them that. What's the point in saying hypocrisies or at least inconsistencies? That seems to say in that one sentence that they were probably inconsistencies as opposed to hypocrisies. But we're going to stick that in there because, you know, it's mostly white people that read the New York Times. And what's the proof that he was a hypocrite? The fact that he said mean and hurtful things to Joe Frazier. You know, a boxing opponent. Because he called Joe Frazier a gorilla. So you can, if you've got the stomach for it, and you just absolutely have a passion for wasting your time, feel free to go and read the New York Times obituary. Yeah, Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, you got a point there. Since when, in the past 20 years, has Brutal Truth appeared in the New York Times? Yeah, not so much. And because, I mean, and I should have known better. But then again, it prompted that pathetic obituary. It prompted some broader and wider thinking. But that was the first thing I noted. Why can't you quote somebody speaking honestly about his own existence on the pages of the New York Times? Would it have engendered a pearl clutching frenzy? Someone have had to have gotten the smelling salts for Mrs. Bennington Dewdrop Cadwallader the Seventh? Had that phrase appeared on the pages and the electronic transmissions of the New York Times? Ooh, I like that name, Barrington Dewdrop Cadwallader the Seventh. Call him Ba. I'm sure they summer in Kennebunkport too. The Cadwalladers. And it's hard not to come down to the conclusion that the reason you can't print that phrase is because he was Muhammad Ali was darker than the paper on which. His skin was darker than the paper on which the New York Times is printed. Yeah, Moran Monday. Lots and lots of, definitely Morans. Lots and lots of Morans. Big old juicy, stupid morons. What else? Well, let's see. Let's run over to the mailbox. Scott in San Diego says, it's worth remembering that Muhammad Ali's draft case in the Supreme Court did not concern itself with litigating the Vietnam War. The question at hand was whether he was a bona fide conscientious objector. Several years ago, HBO offered a dramatic film about it, Muhammad Ali's Greatest Fight. While not perfect, it captures the essence of the case and story. I had seen it when it first aired in 2013, and I rewatched it last night. It was quite good. For those with access to HBO Go, it can currently be seen there, and there are probably other means elsewhere in various corners of the interweb tubes. Muhammad Ali's Greatest Fight. And, of course, he couldn't, you know, how could he possibly be a conscientious objector? Because, you know, them Nation of Islam, that wasn't no real religion. Eh? Mm-hmm. In Australia, Bob, you probably knew this. There's no promise of 72 virgins for martyrs, terrorists, or suicide bombers anywhere in the Quran. The section that many people claim promises this is chapter 78, Surat In-Naba, the Great News. The controversy is due to the poor translation of one verse from verses 29 to 34. And young full-breasted maidens of equal age translates as companions of equal age. Thank you, Robert. A note from Steve, a member of the Trinity of Steve, this being Stephen Vrott. Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have the highest disapproval rating of any candidates heading into the general election in American history. What the Sanders campaign has done is to bring our attention to how the corporate political elites have taken away the democratization of political power in the underclasses, the poor, the working class, and a greater piece of the shrinking middle class, and promoted a sense of weakness and collective futility that eventually ends up in political apathy and resignation. The privilege that brings wealth, power, and authority is the privilege of Hillary Clinton and her corporate backers. There's a strange echo of another failed political philosophy called supply-side economics. Somehow the elites will bestow fairness, justice, and opportunity to those below them by magically pulling the strings, and then life will be better. Bernie talks about struggle, a never-ending struggle against the corporate elites who want it all, some of whom are the very same elites running the Democratic Party. Except for the Bernie campaign, have you noticed this election cycle is about voting against something, not voting for something? How can voters be aspirational when the choice is between a corporate stooge and a psychopathic dissembler? The Republican Party has embraced fascism. They have tapped into the dark, delusional, violent side of the American character, and it's here to stay unless the American people start to pay more attention. The Democratic Party needs to be more democratic. The Republican Party needs to be voted out of existence. If the goal has been to demobilize the electorate and reduce political activity within the narrow boundaries as defined by the corporate state, the Clinton campaign has been successful. Clinton will blame Bernie supporters for not turning out for her if she loses the general election, but if that happens, let's put the blame where it lies, the primary voters who supported Clinton, and of course, the candidate herself. Yeah, I think they're already cranking up that wambulance. Although, by tomorrow evening, remember, we won't have, it'll likely be past midnight tomorrow night before we have results out of California. So the way the Clinton camp is seeing this is that they're hoping that New Jersey will be the state that puts Hillary over the top in terms of pledged delegates. I've read a lot that says that has said otherwise, that she would have to, she won in Puerto Rico. Go figure. I'm guessing maybe a lot of the Puerto Ricans who voted weren't the people who are suffering under the economic lash there now. It was probably more the hoi polloi and the well-to-do. But that's the plan. They'll declare victory tomorrow night and demand that Bernie exit. Hard to know. Marty noting, yes, when Kissinger goes down, the Horman family, Edmund, Elizabeth, and Joyce, will have been denied accountability in the death of Charles during the coup in Chile. Yeah, it's not justice delayed, it's justice denied. Tim from L.A., what Bernie said of Muhammad Ali. Bernie Sanders acknowledged at a rally Saturday that the apparent irony of Donald Trump's tweet that paid tribute to Muhammad Ali. The irony? Ali was a devout Muslim, and Trump has suggested temporarily banning all Muslims from entering the U.S. And because of this suggestion, the presumptive Republican presidential nominee has been slammed as Islamophobic. To all of our Donald Trump supporters who tell us that they love Muhammad Ali but say they hate Muslims, Understand, Ali was a devout Muslim that took his faith very seriously, Sanders said at an event in Los Angeles at the Memorial Coliseum on Saturday. Tim says it was moving, and Bernie gave a powerful eulogy. Bill in Montana says, speaking of protégés, another protégé of Cheney is none other than Victoria Nuland, wife of noted neocon Robert Kagan, brother of Fred Kagan of PNAC fame. Her name has been bandied about for Secretary of State in the administration of the Hill Monster. Whoa. Chilling. Oh, but then who was it? There's a woman who wrote a book about the horrors, in part at least, about the horrors of Kissinger. She just received will receive last week, next week, something like that. A World Kissinger Award bestowed by the hands of the man himself. What is it, Powers? Is that her name? Powers? Yeah. All right. So, here we are at the top of the hour. And we'll take a break, open the phone lines for more on Monday. We have many, many nominees yet to go through. You know the numbers, the stress line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And then there's the other line, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. And you can use any of them you choose for reaching the program. And you are welcome so to do. In addition to Nani Mouse with the challenge on the table, in addition to Nani Mouse, big thanks going out to Janie in Texas. That takes us to $200 of the $300 we need to raise this evening. And thanks to a brand new subscriber, Laurel, in Minnesota. We now have only $90 to go in Chris in Germany's challenge for this Moran Monday. Thank you very kindly on all counts. All right, so, break time. And your calls or me filibobstering. You pick. This is the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Yes, we can bomb most any land. On CNN with marching bands. Pour ourselves an ice cold Coke. Make a war. Tell a joke. All there, all over me. The fear and insecurity. Yes, I am American. from Pearl Harbor to Afghanistan. Now Vietnam is history, and brother, that lesson didn't come for free. The politicians, they didn't bleed. Misguided patriots, indeed, indeed, indeed. Are we an empire? Loose, loose, fast. Or can we find a peace that'll last? Is the answer here at home? Home, 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 home. Or is it buried in a foreign storm?
Jason Ringenberg from the album Empire Builders of, oh my God, 12 years back. That song is called American Reprieve. I suggest you purchase it. It might come in handy. The whole thing is, whole album's wonderful, but there's something about that particular tune. Let's see. Immediately to the phones in just a minute, but we got another piece of mail here from our buddy Andy out in Redwood City. On a number of your recent shows, you've made the assertion that there's no there in relation to the Clinton State Department private home-based email server. You are wrong. You are not telling the truth about the Clintons, which many are afraid to take on, especially the progressive media. God damn, how many more listeners do I have to lose telling the truth about the Clintons before I've told enough truth about the Clintons? The Clintons ruined the Democratic Party. They ripped the heart and guts out of the New Deal policies with those monopolistic pro-1% policies. They gutted the Democratic Party and forced out representatives of the working class. Yeah, and? There's no way I could ever support voting for them. You have to consider the conflicts of interest in regard to the Clinton Foundation and private email server. Okay, we've changed gears here. The Clinton Foundation is a tremendous conflict of interest for a Secretary of State. No argument from me. Quid pro quo, decisions made for the benefit of contributors to the fund. No questions. There have been accusations of bribes from Kazakhstan, Canadian oil businessmen, energy construction firms. Joe Wilson represented one documented giveaway in Africa, and others. No argument. The independent server is a breach of trust in clean government. No argument. It allows FOIA requests to unearth corrupt conduct to go unheeded. True again. The press can't FOIA a private server. True enough, I guess. Just like a tortured human being in Guantanamo can't make claims under constitutional claims and avail himself of habeas corpus. It's all about Ms. Clinton avoiding the FOIA. Okay? So many Democrats are cutting Ms. Clinton tremendous slack, including you. Jesus jumping Christ, including me, cutting her slack. When I sit here night after night and I declare that I am convinced that if she is the nominee, we will be learning to say President Trump by January 20th of 2017. Mm-hmm. When I've talked about how disgusting it is that she is a protege of Henry Kissinger. When I have questioned time after time after time after time after time after time after time the atrocious judgment she displays in her vote for Iraq, the Iraq War, in her ham-fisted advocacy for military intervention in Libya, for the brutality of her decisions surrounding the coup in Honduras, for her desire to have us some more war in Syria. But I'm cutting her slack. There's no pleasing some people. Come on, Bob. How about some critical thinking? You'd vote for them, two unethical moral grifters, Team Clinton. At least acknowledge many, many independent critical thinkers will not vote for Ms. Clinton because of the email server, which was, is, and will continue to be a big issue with a there. The email server is emblematic of mendacious behavior, a way to hide illicit agreements to benefit the pocketbook of the grifters. Great. Now, out of all of that, show me an indictable offense. Show me the federal prosecutor who will hand all of that to a grand jury and say, no, really, see if you can come up with a criminal charge out of it, please. Show me the grand jury that can come up with that between now and, say, October. Has there been a grand jury impaneled? Why, no, there hasn't. And we're talking about emails that we've been talking about for years that people are still going through. But a grand jury is going to sort all that out and issue issue a true bill sometime in the next few months. Got it. Now, in order to find an indictment, to find a true bill, the grand jury, a federal grand jury, will have to find that there is more evidence than not that a crime has been committed, and that since it's more likely than not that a crime was committed, that it is more likely than not that Hillary Clinton is the one who committed it. That's just a 50% plus 0.0001 likelihood. That's a hurdle. That's a tough hurdle under these circumstances. Yeah, it's shady, it's sleazy, it's slimy, it's stupid. And it's mendacious, and on and on and on and on. Getting a grand jury to say that it is some sort of federal felony, however, is a different matter. Then, but let's be charitable. If that said grand jury then issues a true bill, then she will have to be tried, and that jury will have to find her guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. Beyond a reasonable doubt is something that has been from time to time equated with a moral certainty. Not just more likely than not, but so likely as to exclude any possibility, though not all possibilities, most reasonable possibilities of innocence. I submit that people who think that that's going to happen, in a purely moral universe, that's going to happen. In the United States of America, where the word purely moral is nothing more than two words that don't fit in any cultural context with this country, it ain't. Andy continues, I'm with Eugene V. Debs. It is better to vote for what you want and not get it than to vote for what you want and get it. I think that last part is for what you don't want and get it. Andy says you'll regret your vote. Nah, not here. Not in West Virginia. She doesn't have a prayer in West Virginia. She's gonna be swept away like so much bird shit on the pavement by a flood tide of T-Rump malevolence and outright knuckle-breathing, mouth-walking ignorance. Andy says, the biggest regret of my voting political life, voting for Mr. Obama the first time, a man dedicated to the Clinton enrichment playbook, crush the working class, pivot to the corporate 1%. I get all that. I don't think I've got a philosophical argument with Andy. At all. Annie. But to suggest that Hillary Clinton is getting some sort of pass on this program? Holy Jesus. I don't read half of the emails and various messages that I've gotten saying that, you know, I'm with her. We need a woman president. Again, no argument with that either. I just don't think we need this woman to be president. On the other hand, it is a binary choice. There are false binaries, false dualities, and real dualities. And it's a real duality this November. Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. I mean, you know, sorry. It is not even within the realm of considerable possibility that Jill Stein is going to be the president of the United States come January 20th, 2017. Ain't going to happen. Weld and Gary Johnson from the Libertarian Party. Sorry, thanks for playing. Here's a lovely copy of the home game. It's not the way the system's designed. Again, you don't like the system. You don't like the way you don't like the outcome of the system. Fix the system. But I have no philosophical argument with Andy. But if you think that Loretta Lynch and some, I guess, U.S. attorney there in D.C. is going to impanel a grand jury, or if it does happen, it'll happen after she's already president. And that may well be obviated by the fact that the House of Representatives, for any reason or no reason, if she's inaugurated on January the 20th, will institute impeachment proceedings on January 21st. There will be no honeymoon. There will be no first 100 days. It is going to be a march through hell from beginning to however it ends. Because that is what the Republican Party have committed themselves to long before the idea of her having a server was ever even thought of. Because they started their preparations to prevent a Hillary Clinton presidency on January the 20th, 1993. And this may be the case. Like I said, I've read a lot of stuff that says she can't reach pledged delegates tomorrow. Jay Cruzen, Bob. Now you can't do that, Jay Cruzen, because you'll get a cease and desist letter from Ron and Raleigh for gimmick infringement. There aren't enough pledged delegates left for Hillary or Bernie to win on pledged only. Hillary needs 571 pledged. She's going to declare victory tomorrow night on superdelegates. Which is interesting because I'm pretty sure that there will be a question on the floor, at least here in West Virginia, come Friday and Saturday, in which I imagine it is likely that we will pass a resolution demanding that our superdelegates vote the way their state voted. James writing in says, that jury has been impaneled. It will vote once on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. There will be no appeal. Meanwhile, a note from Gerald. Jesus Christ, cutting her slack? Is Andy sure he's been listening to the same show you're broadcasting? Yeah, well, there's no, I mean, there's the depth of, and I understand it, okay? Hating Hillary because Dan Burton shot a watermelon in his backyard in Indiana and proved that she killed Vince Foster is insane, okay? Hating Hillary Clinton because Ann Coulter said that she and Bill decorated their Christmas tree with condoms is insane. In this case, I think generally hate is a wasted emotion. Disliking her and distrusting her over, you know, Iraq, and Libya, and Syria, and Honduras. Over, I know how to deal with men who go off the reservation. Over, we have to bring super predators to heel. Over the prison industrial complex and what later morphed into the school to prison pipeline. Over the kneecapping of the poor. Over the bankruptcy vote. See how long the list is? That's not insane. And those are misgivings that I share. I mean, frankly, honest to God, I wouldn't go across the street to see her. Or Trump. Bah. One more note and then to the phones. Ray in Florida says, now that the 1% know they can steal the Democratic nomination, they will do it from now on. It's over. Look, I said it. I've said it time and again. What we got with Bernie in this moment, in this season, ain't coming again. This was it. This was a pass-fail test with one question on it. And if we fail it, there ain't no do-over. And it is, as they say, what it is. Now let's run over to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yo, Bob.
Hey, what's happening, man?
How you feeling?
I'm better.
You better?
Yeah, I'm not in perpetual misery from my gut. I've had several days of not having pain, so I really feel like I'm kind of winning.
Have you been able to nourish yourself?
I just took it really, really gently for a couple or 3 weeks.
All right, because that's important. I got to be a surrogate for a second. I'm going to try to be delicate for a minute, but I don't know who this person. Oh, Danny?
Andy.
Andy?
No, Andy's been listening. Andy's been listening practically from the very beginning.
Well, apparently he's got earwax. I mean, or he's not paying attention to listening to you juxtaposed to the goddamn news. I mean, this fascist weirdo is coming close to knocking on the door, right? We can't have this. I'm sorry. At the end of the day, we got to circle the wagons. Fuck that. You know, this is getting to be serious.
Well, I mean, but again, Todd. How you vote in South Carolina don't matter.
Of course it doesn't. Exactly. And that was going to be one of my questions.
I mean, I've got some grievances inside the Democratic Party. I am pissed off. Well, maybe that's not even fair. People vote the way they vote for a reason, and who the fuck am I to question it? But front loading the Confederacy, where even a liberal in the Confederacy is about as liberal as. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. It's not going to matter.
Yeah, I'm I'm a Southerner, so I can do this. You know? Yeah, I'm a Southern liberal. I got 72 guns in my house.
Well,
And I guess if anything, I'm frustrated with myself, Todd, and I'm frustrated with Southern Democrats because I can't make any sense out of it. I mean, I can't. And on the one hand, it smells like disenfranchisement on my part, and I don't want to participate in that. But on the other hand, why in the hell did we set up the Democratic primary process to let the Confederacy vote first? Because if the final primaries were Alabama and South Carolina instead of California and New Jersey, the numbers would be radically flipped.
And the perception.
And the perception.
Which is powerful. Right. I'm with you. Exactly.
I depend on y'all to be sort of a gut check for me. If I'm asshole, if I'm walking over there to join asshole America, I'd like for you to just kind of tap me on the shoulder. No, Bob, come back this way.
Look, you know, I call it. I've been told I'm not politically correct. I've been told that
I'm a flat out racist for saying that the Southern Democratic votes are meaningless.
But it's a damn look. It didn't register with people when I said it around here or maybe to you or whatever. But, we're supposed to be the People's Party. However, the rules of our club, the Democratic Party, are way too off. See, I'm getting off target now, but what I'm trying to say, we're supposed to be the People's Party. We're supposed to be the populist, right? We're supposed to be the voice of the people. But the way the GOP's rules are set up, look, they've got a fascist weirdo. We're supposed to be the people speaking for the people, right?
Right.
That's what we're supposed to be doing. Ever since Johnson switched everything around, that's what we're supposed to be about. I mean, in my mind, maybe I'm off. Maybe I need a gut check, but that's the way I see it. So,
well, I don't think the way you see it is in any way askew. And let's understand one thing. According to the Clinton camp, anybody who ever delivered a cold cup of coffee to David Brock is a racist. Okay.
See, fuck all that shit. Fuck that shit. We have to get now. Look, race is obviously a part. Like I said before, maybe I don't know. We're dealing with white lash and. I don't give a fuck if somebody calls me prejudice or what. I'm just call it like I see it. Fuck that. I live here. I know what the fuck is going on. I'm in the South. I see this shit. If Jim Crow was alive again, you understand? We're in some fucked up shit. But I digress. What I'm trying to say is that we need to start changing. Just like they can see the GOP can switch the votes. They can switch the rules around at the convention. See, I'm still not convinced Trump is going to get in. Because he's got dementia, he's got all kinds of fucked up shit. But us, we're stuck with that weirdo woman who's in Florida now and with the kinky hair, and she needs to back the fuck up. She needs to go out on a stretcher. Fuck her. She's fucked everything up.
Okay, that the stretcher part is a little disturbing, but I understand what you said.
Well, yeah, I don't mean it literally.
And the best way to do that is to beat her in her own primary, is for Tim Canova to beat her in her own primary. And then the Debbie Wasserman Schultz problem is solved. But it's not just Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Let's deal with the reality. The fact of the matter is the Clintons are by this time, 25 years down the road from 1992, they are old hands at this. They are good at this.
They're good at this. They like the mud, actually. They like it.
And they are you take the raw populism, and I'm by raw populism I mean the kissing hands and shaking babies, by Bill Clinton, who loves to press the flesh and all of that stuff, the ruthless, efficient, bureaucratic talents of Hillary Clinton. And you've got a formidable machine. You know, the reason the Democratic primary shaped up the way it did, Todd, is because they've been working it since 2004. Bernie decided to run a year ago.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, that's putting a trained army, and I hate eliminationist metaphors, but I'm doing it anyway. That's putting a trained army up against a ragtag insurgency.
Well, and I like what you said about twisting around the order. Right. So, see, I really get irritated when I hear the press say, well, Bernie, you know, he needs to just get out. Listen, there's a lot of people who gave a lot of money. Everybody deserves their vote. They need to shut up and let this process spin out, as they say in legal terms. Let it spin out. Okay? Just be quiet. The man has obviously got a following. Let him do what he has to do.
Well, that's something I said the other day. You know, the Hilarians just need to take a deep breath and about 20 Xanax and just let this process be what it is. Because the more they try to constrain the process, the angrier they make people. And maybe that's the essential cluelessness of Hillary sort of filtering down through the ranks. Because, you know, every Hilarian out there is speaking from set talking points. You know, for instance, if you bring up Kissinger, well, I mean, she just mentioned him in the debate. That's all she did.
Well, that's where you got me. See, that's where I started with Muhammad Ali. But, yeah, you know, I'm going back to that. That's the same debate where Bernie brought up Mossadegh and kind of lost some of the audience because they were too young to understand what he was talking about. But you see, I remember that. I remember it like yesterday. The look on his face, he looked like he had a winning lottery ticket in his hand when she brought up Kissinger and she started kissing parts of his body, you know, figuratively. And he was like, oh, I don't think so. You know, and I mean, really, come on. So you're just showing, you know, I'm calling her, what am I calling her? I'm calling her WMW, the warmongering woman. That's what she is. All right, let's just face it. I mean, this thing with Libya, they just got mad with Libya. You know, Gaddafi's not a great guy, so what?
We came, we saw, he died.
That shit ain't funny. Fuck that. Fuck that shit. That is not funny.
No. Anybody getting raped with a sword is not funny.
That shit ain't funny anywhere. Period.
And by the way, you're getting fan mail. Carol Baker says, I do love Todd when he gets wound for sound. Because she said, fuck that shit. Fuck all that shit. You can't get that on C-SPAN.
They need it. I love C-SPAN. This was their anniversary, man. We were in college. We would watch C-SPAN. Oh, my God. I can tell you stories.
Oh, you were a C-SPAN nerd, too?
Hell yeah! We were in a whole house, man. A whole bunch of us, man. We dropped ass at watching C-SPAN. That was crazy.
Okay, I didn't do that. Oh, what I must have missed.
But that's a whole. Boy, that's a good story. But you know, this
back when you could, man, I can't imagine what it must be like to watch Newt Gingrich melt.
Listen, but you know what's funny during that experience? We turned the sound off and we figured out exactly what those jackasses were talking about, because the next day we were like, oh shit, how did we know that? You know, they didn't have any closed captioning then. This was way back. This is, you know, early 80s, maybe, you know, like what, 83, 84 or something like that. Yeah, that, you know, C-SPAN is a, if people don't listen to, people need, if you want to be hip in politics, you got to listen and watch C-SPAN, because that is the true pulse of America. You can hear why the fascist is where he is. When you hear these people call in from the hinterlands, it's like, oh, wow, you ate nails for breakfast and you had gunpowder for lunch. Damn. Anyway.
Wow, that's it. Okay, wait a minute. Wait. Gunpowder for lunch. That's good. Yes.
Wow, Bob. I can't tell you how much I love that cowbell. Honest to God. And speaking of cowbells, I was listening to Tracy talk the other day. You know what? I am so glad she's expanding her culinary experiences with her dual grill. When she really learns how to smoke, like I had to, you know, the hard way, smoke that fruit wood, man, she's going to be eating good on it.
See, I'm so glad that I'm so glad I'm not the only one. And I was out on the weekend, of course, you know, couldn't do anything about it, but okay, you got to tell me, and we're just going to enjoy life for a minute here, and we're gonna pull our hip waders up, and we're gonna march back out of the swamp. I noticed that one may now purchase what looks like reasonably well constructed electric smoker. You know, like what they've got at so we've got a Texas barbecue chain, and they actually have the. It's not just the best barbecue around. It's pretty much the only barbecue around. It's a place called Dickey's. They probably got Dickey's in South Carolina, although that just makes me, I think the universe should come undone for something like that.
I don't know what they might be smoking at Dickey's.
But they've got an electric smoker is the whole point. And mm-hmm. So there's a thermostat and everything, and you control the smoke, and it produces some. But damn, that feels like cheating. Because the whole point of the smoker is that you soak your wood. You get your fire where you want it. You put your, you know, you've rubbed and you've rested and you put that all on the smoker. You get the fire going. You throw in the wet hunk of hickory or apple or whatever, and you got your folding chair there and an ice cold cooler of beer, and that's how you do that.
Man, I'm telling you, that is one of the best parts of the South. And then you know you're doing it right, when your neighbors start, like, look over the fence, and then they start hanging around the front. And then you see a little cloud of smoke kind of wafting over the neighborhood. And then you really know when you go get some beer, and you come back and say, damn, what is that smell? Oh, that's my yard.
Yeah. or as night begins to fall, and the haze of your... And of course, this what we're talking about here is contributing to climate change. Yes, I understand that, but I'm not going to beat myself up as long as they're doing the tar sands thing. But when you come back and you see that haze has hung low through the area where you live, and the whole place is just perfumed with hickory or apple, pecan, pear. You ever tried pear?
I haven't. I don't have any pear trees.
Pear, basically, usually you got to find somebody who's just who's just cut one down or something. Pear is downright sexy.
See, I believe that. I've learned the hard way. Like, I have enough pecan trees on my property. Not that I'm wealthy or anything, but we got, you know, pecan trees. And Tracy will learn this, well, maybe not in L.A., but anyway, anybody who lives out in the country, those twigs that are like maybe... no bigger than your middle finger or my middle finger, which I have big hands, but, they're perfect. And you put them on, you soak them. If you put them on at the perfect time, you figure it out. It's a beautiful
thing. And I saw the very grill that Tracy has this weekend.
You said that. I heard you say that.
But, I mean, I saw it, and it was, like, on sale, and I'm like, she is going to have so much fun. You know, because if you're in a hurry and it's just hamburgers or weenies, you turn on the gas grill side of it, and you're done.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm down with the
You can't smoke on it. Eventually, if the bug bites, she will have a standalone smoker.
But see, she'll figure this out slowly. She's a virgin with this, right? She'll figure it out. She'll be like, oh, wait a minute. Like, I heard you, man. You were telling her exactly. And then that mesquite, mesquite might be okay from Texas, but you're right. It gives the meat an acrid taste. You cannot go wrong with fruit wood. You have to have the fruit wood.
Or hickory, you know? Yeah.
Or hickory, yeah. Hickory.
And never, ever, ever, ever a Kingsford charcoal briquette. Or anybody else's charcoal briquette.
Listen, I've learned, man, from my neighbors. I used to, when I first got here, I really didn't know the difference between these trees. But see, every time we have a storm, like we've had storms now, so I'll get in the car and I'll scout out. I'll look for the oak you know, to get my fire started. You got to get it started. And then, like I said, I had pecan, and it falls because these trees are getting old. And it's just, you know, once you get in the groove, it's really a beautiful thing. And it becomes like a family thing, and people know. And teriyaki likes smoke. I mean,
oh, yes, it does.
See, you know, Bob, man. Look, man, we got to hang out, man. We got to eat. Come on, man. We got to eat.
Yeah, well, see, yeah, all we got to do is become a worldwide phenomenon. Then we can have the horn in, and I'll do the barbecue, and we'll get a select team together, and we'll be in charge of the barbecue.
We can get a sixth and a little cooler. Oh, man.
Yeah, see, you know. Yeah.
It's that easy. So you were preaching. Now, this is not Wednesday, but you were preaching. And I just have a little, I want to give a little Just my insight into Muhammad Ali, because I got a little offended, like some of these commentators, like, well, he was a good role model for Black Americans, but you know, my memory, at 10, you know, six, like 75, I was like maybe 10, 11 years old, 75, 76, and if you had an I'm the Greatest t-shirt, that was a big deal, and it was everybody, the Irish kids, the German, anybody. You know, it was not about race, because and it wasn't even about politics. Like, we were too young to really understand the politics. We just knew that he was a great American, right? And everybody wanted to be Muhammad Ali because he was the greatest. He would beat somebody even if he didn't like boxing. Remember, we didn't have channels.
Yeah, and you know, tucked in behind all of this is the fact that boxing should probably go away now.
It should. Disgusting. It really
and so should good. And so should MMA and these shitty little cage brawls that pop up from city to city. I mean, it seems like we're having one we're having one every 2 weeks.
See, I think it destroys the social fabric. Somebody asked me if I was last year. I mean, I'm just out and about someplace I don't usually go to. So they didn't really know me. And I'm like, no, I don't participate in that. But see, that I can see, and when, you know, I had to think about it. I was like, this is not a good thing. Because then people get hyped up. You know what I'm saying? The ego gets in. And,
yeah.
You know, certain people, it's just not a good thing. That I can see where that will go. It's not a good thing. But Muhammad Ali, and then when people found out that he was with the NOI, which is Nation of Islam, see, there's a lot of American history behind that. And remember, Black history and American history, it's our history. See, a lot of folks who have been to prison, they adopt NOI in prison for safety or for whatever reason to get peace of mind. And then they come out and see the NOI is about self-reliance. It's really like kind of the American capitalist dream, because what they do, they set up their own community. They have their own stores. Like in Philly, like Chief takes a big, you know, steak shops. They call them steak shops.
Yeah.
Steak shop. And they sell pizza too, but mostly steaks. Cheese steak sandwiches. So.
Yeah, getting a slice at a cheesesteak place is like going to the beach and ordering steak.
Oh, and I mean, it's good. It ain't, I mean, you eat a cheesesteak, you don't need, you're full. You're full.
No, it's a real thing that is not necessarily replicated elsewhere, even though everybody else sells cheesesteaks now. Cheesesteaks.
Cheesesteak. And a lot of it is about the bread and the cut of the meat, but for some reason that area, it's like low, you know, Philly's like not that far above sea level. And it does something to the bread, like this place called Amoroso.
Well, that's like New York. They say that, you know, the thing with New York and the pizza crust and the bagels is it's the water.
It's the water. Oh, they got great water. It comes from the Adirondack. Yeah, they have great water. So you know, people don't understand that, and it's a shame, and they don't get it. But look, history has borne Muhammad Ali to be right about what he was saying. He knew that shit was wrong. And like you said, they couldn't stand it. And I'm sorry if you lose people, whatever, but that's just the truth. And you know, when he did that, the NOI was mysterious. Even a lot of my people, we were like, we go to get a steak, and like, you know, my dad was like, don't look at him too hard. You know, because it looked different. The women had, it wasn't a full hijab, but they were covered. No, who else was wearing that shit then? Nobody, that was weird. Nobody was doing that. You know, and the long dresses and everything, and they kept to themselves. You know, but now it's commonplace in the city, man. They're, you know, no, you don't even look twice. It's not a big deal. But that was a really big deal then, you know, but people have to do what they do to survive. You know, it's like a survival mechanism. So that's something that folks don't understand. And I really get, offended and hurt. And, you know, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. You know, when they bring that up, you know, I mean, you have to been there. Just like right now, like at the subway stop, they have these guys called the 12 Tribes of Israel, and they look like weirdos, but you know, they feel like they're the lost tribe of Jews that never got a fair shake or whatever.
Black dudes.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, right. I saw them in D.C.
Yeah,
they set up right outside the Chinatown Metro station.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's what they do in Philly. Yep.
I spent a couple of afternoons there. Ferg was younger, and I said, just keep your mouth shut and listen and learn.
There you go. See, that's it. This is a big country. Just, you know, I don't mind espousing it, but, you know, this is supposed to be the place. We are the place. And we'll be we'll be great again without this fascist weirdo. But it's just interesting. So you know, you were really touching on some things. But what is going on with Flayton Joe? I mean, he's been in a bad breakup.
Morning blow.
Flayton Joe Scarborough.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, I can't begin to say. It, yeah. I used to get up in the morning and have my morning ruined every day by that bunch. And since we cut the cord, not so much. I mean, my day was either ruined or my show or the program was made by 9 o'clock in the morning, just because of the idiocy that would come, you know, boiling out. But
that's what I don't get.
But I don't know. It's a meltdown. It's an eighth grade breakup. You know, where they and you know, the fact that he had the nerve to criticize somebody else for lobbing softballs at T-Rump. Well, I mean, the goddess of irony was out there going, I am going to fuck you so hard.
Yeah. But see, Bob, I have so many questions about that. You know, I made a comment. I don't know. It might have been a few weeks ago or whatever. But I used to watch. I really had stopped watching him because after a while, I was like, well, this guy can't be serious. I mean, he's got this weird look on his face. And how he must know something. He has a show, and I keep waiting for his intelligence to come through, and it's like it never manifests itself. You know, I'm like, well, you're just dull as a damn bowling ball. What the fuck?
Well, just all you got to do to keep it in perspective, Todd, is to remember that this is the guy they replaced what's-his-name with after the nappy-headed hose comment over the Rutgers women's basketball team. Don Imus. That was Joe's big break. And see, now he's a journalist, and he gets to show up on Meet the Prestitutes and stuff like that.
But, okay, this is my question. Now, you have been on television many times. Now, do these people not have, like, a coach? Like, somebody says, hey, you know, I don't think you should say that because it's not going to float. You know, just, you know, somebody that, you know what I mean? I don't understand. Because what he was saying was so off base. And I mean, honestly, after watching that, remember, I don't have cable, and I have a link that I may share with people. And I mean, it's so selective. Somebody on the inside puts this link out. They're in the Midwest somewhere, and they have a counter on there, and it might be only there might be 400 people at the most in the whole world that watches this. Because they only have so many slots, right?
Right.
But you can watch Al Jazeera, which, you know, the European Al Jazeera, they still show. BBC, all the news. I'm not willing to give it out on the air. I mean, you know, I'll give it out selectively because I don't want to get shut out either. But, you know, this is how I used to watch them. But what I'm saying is that they already had, like, in my opinion, 30% credibility. You know, they were in their last standard deviation. They were about to go in the tail end anyway. Then when he came out with that nonsense that you so prophetically, not prophetically, but so accurately commented on, I was done, man. I'm like, I'm not even wasting my time with these people. Forget about it. You know, it's for what? And, you know, it for him to say what he said, you know, CNN, I'm like, hey, you just like an old jealous bitch. What the fuck is your problem? You know, pass him the box of tissues, and I'm not going to repeat what I said, but just...
No, I get it. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's got an IFB in their ear. The producer can talk to any of them if he wants to. And they have, you know, they have a pre-show meeting every morning. I think, you know, part of it is that every now and then they've got just a little space for Joe to go off the rails. I just had a note from Ray in Florida saying, you watched Morning Joe because you have this thing for Mika, and I really don't.
But
the dynamic between those two, I mean, they come across, they're like a 50s sitcom where you really did think that Hugh Beaumont and Barbara Billingsley were married to each other in Leave It to Beaver. And it's like watching it's like getting up every morning and getting to watch a dysfunctional marriage between an abusive man and a woman who doesn't want to take it, but she's
stuck in that bad marriage.
She is stuck in that bad marriage because ain't nobody gonna hire Mika without no Joe.
Yeah, well, oh my God.
I mean, okay. If anything, though, I think one of the more enjoyable clips I've seen of them lately is the one where you could tell it was physically painful for Mika to detail all the ugliness out of that Department of State Inspector General's report. And when she finally tossed it to, I'm sure she wanted to toss it to Bill in the Weather Center, but instead she tossed it to Mrs. Greenspan and said, "Is she lying?" And that left Mrs. Greenspan out there in the distance, tap dancing. Well, you know, it's not that's for the voters to decide. Well, no, ma'am, you're supposedly a journalist. If somebody's lying to us, you're supposed to say, "Hey, they're lying to you."
Right,
I wanted to think that I could. Oh, thanks, Mika. Thanks a fucking million. You lay it on me, and now the headlines are all going to say Mrs. Greenspan calls Hillary a liar. But that was some fine television, just from pure entertainment value. I mean, you know the way wrestling is fine television.
Well, and then, right, because when he goes off the rails, she just starts to look down at the paper. Wow, let me look for the next story.
Oh, he's dead. And you know what that look is? You know what that look is, Todd? That's the, oh, my God, he's been drinking again look.
I think he's on the Adderall and doing a, like a...
The person in a bad marriage and the other one has a problem... And it's obvious the person with the problem is having the problem right then. Oh, he's drinking again. Oh dear.
Why he could be drinking that.
Why can't he just? Doctor. Why can't he just stay sober? Just one day. Please, Jesus, why?
Does he look like Snoopy? I mean, he looks like Snoopy to me for some reason.
Well, there's a new one, Snoopy Scarborough. That may have legs.
I mean, look at Snoopy. I used to love Snoopy. Snoopy and the Red Baron, that was my thing when I was a kid. But look at Snoopy. Snoopy has little beady eyes. He's got those little beady eyes, like little... But Snoopy was bright. That's the only thing.
Yeah, a big difference.
Well, Tracy, if you're listening, you have no idea. You have just embarked on a whole new dimension of your culinary expansion.
Oh, man, and I was thinking about her ice cream machine at the same time. Get that barbecue. Get a good couple of pork shoulders. Well, it depends on how many, but at least one pork shoulder going and put and fire up the ice cream machine, make some orange pineapple ice cream. Ha!
Well, you know, the 4th is coming up, and my college friends, we have a cookout every 4th, and they come up this way, and we have a green egg. I don't have it. It's in storage. It stays in storage till the 4th. And that thing is no joke. You know, and they
oh, the big green egg?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if you've noticed, but and those things are just awesome.
They're amazing.
That traditional Japanese ceramic, heavy iron, you know, all of that. But now, I don't know, maybe the patent's worn off or something, because Charbroil or Chargriller, I'm not sure which, has come out with their own knockoff of it for several hundred dollars less.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm all for that.
I saw that at Lowe's the other day, and I went,
Well, I'm. You know what? My next thing, I'm going to build a smoker out of some cinder blocks. They got some stuff on YouTube, but, you know.
Yeah, No, that's going. Now, Todd, let me know when you do that, because you will have gone pro.
All right, buddy.
All right. Lo and behold, here is Tracy calling in now.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right, you take care. See you, Todd.
Right.
Bye now.
All right.
Well, shoot. Tracy, try back on the Skype line, dear, because for some reason or another, the stress line decided to unpair itself. There's Tracy. Man, you conjure real good.
Well, it's so funny because I had just turned on, I'm stuck in traffic, I'm having a day, and I'm like, you know, I need to hear some Bob, right? And not 5 minutes into the stream, that's when Todd said my name, and so I need to know what preceded.
Your ears aren't burning. No, it was all good. It was Todd just talking about what a wonderful world you have entered now that you're going to start smoking and grilling and he's with me.
Yeah.
He's with me, Tracy. He says that you're not going to be okay until you have a full on smoker.
Yeah,
once the bug has bitten hard.
I have been told that I have to, not to, because what we have, if I got the attachment, it would just be a side box just for the wood.
Right. That's what
and
it is.
So the whole, yeah. And so Jan's like, I guess I've been told that we're just going to get a full-on smoker.
Right. And maybe shoot me an email or something before you make your decision, because that's the, and not that I'm an expert or anything, but I am expert in buying bad smokers, because there are far more bad ones out there than there are good ones.
No, they're good ones. Yeah.
Of all the ones I've seen lately, the best one I've seen out there that's available in like big box stores, stay away from Charbroil, stay away from Chargriller, stay away, yada, yada, yada. There's one out there that's made of really good heavy gauge steel, and I think it's called Oklahoma Joe, and that's a steel offset firebox smoker.
Ooh, okay, yeah, because it was so funny because I was looking at the firebox thingy to attach to the to the grill, and I had left the picture open. And somebody, you know how when people do reviews of stuff they buy, they send pictures. And I thought of you instantly, said, because somebody had a picture of a, you know, the before and after of a pork shoulder that someone had smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize it, but Alex has seen the picture. And he's like, so when is this going to happen?
When are we doing this? Yes.
When are we doing this?
And that's not to say that you can't do it on what you've got, but it's going to be a lot more difficult.
And that's what, you know, and that's, well, because when I actually used the grill yesterday. I did foil packets with shrimp, corn on the cob, little red potatoes, garlic butter, Old Bay seasoning, salt, pepper, lemon, and parsley.
Well, that's a nice start.
And it was amazing. I saw it on, you know how you get these things on the internet, I mean on Facebook, and it was from Delish or one of them, or Tasty or whatever. And so I was like, okay, this I must make. So I did that for dinner last night along with strawberry shortcake. I cheated. I did not make my own pound cake because I was tired. And that's just, and I still have really not unpacked my kitchen so I could actually really, really seriously bake. So, you know, I got the little cups, the pound cake cups.
You are absolved. Yes.
I mean, trust me, once my kitchen, and I have a feeling that by the end of the month, I will be really done. Unpacking everything and actually have the kitchen to where I want it so I can really cook. But having that grill job is wonderful. Because, you know, I can cook outside. And it, did I tell you it has a side burner as well?
Oh yeah. Well, I know it does. I've seen it. Yeah.
It's, oh my God. And it's so wonderful. And it cooks, you know, like I didn't know. I think a tear kind of formed in my eye when I ate dinner last night. Which we had baked in the Oven of Wonder garlic cheese bread. So, because I can't. So that was fun as well. So it's coming along, but it's a process. It's tedious. Today, Jed and Alex left the house. Because they had to take Kimba for her second series of shots, and I did move furniture around, and actually I think I had to dim the way I wanted, and I still have so many boxes of stuff to do, and it just is never ending. So enough about that. What the hell was going on with Joe Scarborough? I missed that part. So
no,
I'm
nothing
sorry,
really. That was just a general observation on the fact that he apparently is getting closer and closer to being in dire need of a Thorazine dart in the neck.
What did he go off on? Was it
He went off on CNN a week or so ago talking about how they shamelessly fawn over T-Rump.
Doesn't he do the same thing?
Well, the fact that the lightning bolt didn't come out of the sky only means that the goddess of irony is biding her time. She's going to get him.
Well, not unless she gets Hillary first. So, of course, tomorrow is our primary, and of course, we're being bombarded by radio ads and television ads. So, Hillary's latest commercial. A radio ad out here is how her Democratic opponent voted against background checks for guns. And I'm like, why does that not sound right? Or why is it that that's probably like shading the truth, or they're leaving something out? I can't believe. And I've been like, been dying to call about that because I'm like, wait, that doesn't sound right. And if it is, there has to be there's something that was left out, or she's just out and out straight up lying. And I, you know, that's why I count on my Horn family because, you know, y'all know stuff more than I do. So yeah, that's what the ad said because she was talking. she had Trayvon Martin's mother and another young black man's mother who was had been murdered. Just I didn't catch her name, but said, and that was, you know, leading into talk about how Hillary is going to be there for us and blah blah blah, and you know, and how that's when she leads, that's what leads up to her, and she didn't say Bernie Sanders, she says her Democratic opponent did not vote against background checks.
Right, well, and of course you can always counter that by saying, and his Democratic opponent signed off on a multi-tens of millions of dollar international arms deal for the same company that manufactured the weapon that slaughtered, you know, the kids at Sandy Hook.
Right.
Because she did.
And if that's the best she can come at Bernie Sanders with,
all over tomorrow, at least for California. We didn't get a lot of play here in West Virginia, but we got some. And I don't watch local TV enough. You know, the happy talk of the 11 o'clock news just does. Well, I don't. But anyway, so I didn't see or hear any of her ads, and that's a good thing for me. Maybe it's a bad thing for somebody who claims to observe the political landscape, but. Ads are not reality, are they?
No. And you're looking at the bigger picture, because, like you said, Democrat. When's the last time a Democrat carried the South? And on the national level, what did you say about? It's like, you know.
You know, what's it going to say when Arkansas goes resoundingly blood red for Trump?
Right.
And so does South Carolina, and so does Alabama and Georgia, right. And Mississippi and Tennessee and Kentucky Stan and Louisiana Stan and Texas Stan and Oklahoma Stan, and right.
Right.
Well, exactly. I meant to tell you, I got something cute for you. I want to share this with you. I thought you might enjoy it when you were talking about political ads and stuff. So I mentioned a little bit ago that there's not going to be a Friday on the front porch because I'm going to be gone Friday because I'm a delegate at the West Virginia State Democratic Convention.
Right.
And so we're going to have Thursday on thorn in the front porch Thursday. Okay.
Oh, cool.
But so I've gotten some emails and I've gotten some Facebook messages, but this is the damnedest one. This came from somebody named Jade A. Hamilton, who's just a few miles from me, and it's done, you know, she hadn't put a lot of money into it, but it's printed on both sides. The front of it has a picture of, it says, Jade A. Hamilton, I'm with her for Hillary delegate, because you have to run to be a delegate to the national convention, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's got a picture of her standing next to Hillary, and bless her heart, you know, Hillary's got that deer in the headlights look. Deer...
Why does she always look scared? Because of the indictments that are coming?
Shh, there ain't going to be no indictments. We've already been down there.
Right? I know that. But
In fact, I got a response from Andy I hope to share here in a minute. This thing came in, and it had a package of Band-Aids in it.
Band-Aids? Do tell.
And it says, Dear District 3 Delegate, I come from a very active family of Democrats who raised me to believe in economic and social equality for all, and always consider and respect others' opinions and beliefs, even if they did not always align with my own. My grandparents,
blah, blah, blah.
My grandparents and their name, continually inspired and encouraged me to be active in government and to stand up for my beliefs without hesitation and despite popular opinion. Taking my grandparents' encouragement to heart, I decided to really get involved in this election. I'm running for delegate for the 3rd Congressional District and pledge to vote for Hillary Clinton at the Democratic National Convention. In other words, in direct contravention of the will of the people who went out and voted. My decision to support Hillary did not come easy. I, maybe like you, admire and respect much of Senator Sanders' message. You know, much, not all. So you kind of wonder which part you don't respect. The part with the free public college tuition, or the part where we don't get in stupid, senseless wars, or the which part don't you respect, right? The part where everybody who gets sick in America can just go to the doctor? Is that the part you don't respect? I don't know. And continue to applaud his ability to change the conversation and move the party in the right direction. Condescend much? However, I decided to support the candidate who I thought would get the most accomplished. That candidate is Secretary Clinton. I decided to be with her. Why? Because I believe
her... Be with her in the biblical sense?
Well, see, I don't know about all that knowing. And don't much want to, I'm not like that dude in Being There. I don't like to watch. But then we get to this and there will be more laughter. Why? Because I believe her experience, unwavering resilience, and sheer intelligence make her the most qualified candidate to break down the barriers facing our country today. Hillary's good ideas.
So Bernie Sanders is stupid.
Right. But Hillary's good ideas, and again, I can't help but ask, which ones? Like,
which ones?
Supporting the coup in Honduras, was that good idea?
Mass incarceration, what?
Yeah, that good idea. How about the good idea of, Libya? Or how about the good idea of voting for the Iraq war? Or how about the good idea of wanting to go to war in Syria?
Well,
or how about the good
off.
Idea of saying you know how to deal with men who go off the reservation? How
off
about that good
rails.
Idea?
About the reservations and about bringing super predators to heel.
Absolutely, the super predators. Hillary's good ideas are coupled with concrete plans that will move our country forward to a brighter future for all, not just the privileged few. Secretary Clinton is a good person. I don't know many good people who have Christmas dinner with Henry fucking Kissinger, Tracy. She has fought her whole life for women, children, and for equal opportunity for all. Well, why is it, she touts, my first job was working for children with the Children's Defense Fund. Why is it that the founder of that organization says, I want nothing to do with her after what she did supporting so-called welfare reform when we kneecapped all the poor people in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Her concern for the American family is matched by her understanding of international relationships. Well, on that sentence, Tracy, I think we can agree. What?
Yeah, because she gets about as much of a care about poor people and poor families here as she does about when she goes and bombs, and pick a country, or, gets behind a coup, pick a country.
She has worked tirelessly for the American people and deserves to be our first woman president.
I'm tired of them saying, I am so tired of, she deserves it. Again, why?
Deserves to be our first woman president.
It's her turn.
It's her turn. Damn it.
Are you done with that letter? Because I have to ask a question.
Because you have to vomit for a little bit now? No, I'll quit.
I'm driving. No. Because I want to hear more because I'm because what about she deserves? I have a question. I'm going to interject something into this because I was talking to Billable Rick, called me over the weekend with a sweet stuff to check on me. Hi, Rick, if you're listening. So we were talking about Joe Biden. I'm like, well, why is it that, and this is when I have to ask, my foreign family, when was the last time that a vice president, isn't that you? Vice President, if the president, after the second term of that president, what shenanigans and hijinks and tomfoolery and skullduggery happened that Hillary is running for president and not Joe Biden? So mull over that and while we're finishing the letter.
Well, for all I know, that was the agreement that was struck when she agreed to be Secretary of State. I don't know that, and I don't not
if
know
you talk about, but the thing is, for me, it's like, well, if anybody, I mean, talk about this, you know, if anybody should be getting pissy, and I know, like you said, I know it's probably some, you know, cigar smoke back room thing, you know, going on, and like, okay, you're not going to become president. What can we do to shut your ass up and to get you to toe the party line? And they're like, well, I want to be Secretary of State, and when you, you know, if you go for two terms, then I'm running for president. And that's probably how it went, huh?
That's as good a guess as any.
Right. Because if it came down to it, and I think, and Rick and I were talking about this, I would have voted for Joe Biden long before I voted for Hillary Clinton. I wouldn't, you know, if Joe Biden, if it was a thing between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, I would not have had such a hard time voting for Joe Biden if Bernie Sanders did not get the Democratic nomination. I'd rather vote for him than her.
Yeah, but the problem is systemic, Tracy. You know, Joe is a much more personable individual. He likes the political process more. You know, he likes the hand kissing and the baby shaking. But the thing is, he also loves him from fracking. Yeah, maybe it's just how that is up in the thin oxygen ranks of the wealthy limousine cruise missile liberal set. But you know, we can't frack our way to prosperity. The only thing we can do is frack ourselves out of being able to consume water, and that's going to be tough on a water-based species.
Yeah, you know, we have this thing. Wasn't the human body made up? Was the percentage of us is water, like a whole big old chunk of it is water? And they're doing their damnedest to keep us poisoned. I mean, like, places are having, because of fracking, states, there's earthquakes in states where there was never earthquakes before. Why? Because fracking. And then our governor, Jerry Moonbeam Brown, is talking about is allowing fracking here. And it's like, dude, don't you know we live, the whole state is a big, California is one big old fault line. And you are allowing a process that can make it even worse.
See, there you go again.
What? Thinking?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm not the, you know, most, you know, I get tongue-tied and sometimes I can't find the words without just out and out cussing. But it's just, you gotta wonder, what is that Bible verse, and I know you know it, what is the profit of a man to gain this whole world but lose his soul?
Yep.
And it's like, where is your soul? Where, you know, at what point did you make that deal with the devil when you said, you know what, I want what I want, and damn the consequences. And as long as I get what I want, it doesn't matter what everybody else has to go through, what everybody else is going through. It doesn't matter that, you know, mountaintop removal kills and poisons and, you know, I don't know how many burst effects and all, and the, you know, just the immediate stuff, but like the long range stuff. And then people in Flint, Michigan, not having decent drinking water because why? Because the tea bag has decided, well, you know, we don't need to worry about, you know, water filters and stuff like that. You know, that's too expensive. So it's like, you know, let's just skip a step because, you know, it's, who cares? And then you have people like my governor who wants to frack in California. It's like, come on. Seriously? Sometimes this stuff does keep me up at night, but then I just take a Valium and an Ambien and I'm okay.
Better living through chemistry.
Right. But see, and again, it's because, you know, this is that thing like with, you know, the whole thing what they found out that, you know, because Prince died of an overdose. Now, I can go and get pretty much any drug that I want legally. I just tell my doctor what I need or what I'm feeling, and he writes me a prescription for it. And I could drug myself into oblivion. But yet, if I want to smoke weed, which is legal in California, and I couldn't get a medical marijuana prescription, but I can't. Why? Because I drive a cab, and at any moment, I can get drug tested.
Yep.
Because why? Since the DEA has made, you know, marijuana a class, what is it? Since it's still illegal federally,
yeah,
it doesn't matter that it's legal here.
Well, right, and that's the central problem that attends cannabis, is the way it's metabolized and stored. If you let's say you're on your day off and you decide to alleviate your pain, and somebody spot drug tests you 26 days later and THC shows up in your blood system, you're screwed. Even though at no point in time have you ever been in any wise impaired by THC while you were driving.
Ever. Because to me, it's like, I'd rather roll up and smoke a joint than drink Skinny Day, but I can't.
You know, on the other hand, you can drink while you're off duty and get up the next morning with a bone-crushing hangover. And a case of the gin yips, and get behind the wheel, and you can pass, and you can pass a breathalyzer, but you have no business behind a wheel. But that's okay.
Mm-hmm. But that's okay. I was listening. I don't know when this town hall meeting was. I guess it was after one of those, and somebody stood up talking to our president about, you know, gun rights and how you try to take our guns away. I think Obama's just like, I don't give a fuck what you people think. I'm just going to answer these questions the way I've been wanting to answer them for the last 7 years. And it's like, look, I don't know why people keep trying to think I'm trying to take your guns away. As a matter of fact, since I've been president, gun sales have just shot through the roof. And I know you want to say it's because y'all want me dead. Or you're so, you know, you're stockpiling. He's like, but see, because of the NRA, you know, talking of, you know, I know we have verified proof of people that are ISIL sympathizers. They're on a no-fly list. So I could tell them these people cannot fly. But I can't keep them from buying a gun because the NRA does not want us to do background.
Oh, but speaking of the NRA, have you seen? Have you run across this? This is going to make you crazy. There is now an ad campaign being run by an ally of the NRA in California. I kid you not. Let me see here. I might actually have the audio.
Oh, joy.
It's an ad that is directed toward women. And it is called Take Away Our Rights, Take Away Our Life. Wait, where's that coming
from?
Yeah, we'll leave. Okay, so the audio is going to be a problem. And let's see. Let's just go with the description. It launched today. It's an attempt to block a ballot initiative by Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom requiring background checks for purchases of ammunition. Because that's just crazy that you'd have to have a background check to buy bullets. Let's see. Gavin Newsom's dangerous.
I want a background check for the parent that I'm behind this person in the minivan and their kid is in the back seat with no seatbelt on.
Yeah, stupid people. Gavin Newsom's dangerous ballot measure threatens to criminalize law-abiding Californians without taking one weapon out of the hands of criminals and terrorists. Thousands of sheriffs, officers, and prosecutors, our frontline law enforcement officials, are opposed to Newsom's proposal. And so then, none of whom are going to be prevented from buying bullets because they can pass a background check.
If you're a law-abiding citizen, what's the problem?
In the murkily shot black and white ad, a woman walks through a parking deck and is set upon by an attacker. No. In the struggle, the woman pulls a gun from her bag and aims it at the man, a dark figure whose face is never shown. She pulls the trigger. She pulls the trigger. The gun clicks and the scene goes dark. And then in all caps, titles appear saying, "Take away our rights. Take away our life." Well, the only reason the woman wouldn't have any bullets is because she can't pass a goddamn background check.
Exactly. So she shouldn't have a gun in the first place.
Here's the punchline, though. That's the first of two ads.
Oh, wait, there's more.
But wait, there's more. If you order now. Yeah. After this one goes through rotation, they've got the same ad. Only it's got a trans person in it.
Wait, a trans what?
Yeah, the NRA is now out there trying to protect our trans people. Because Tracy, that Wayne LaPierre loves him some trans people.
Yeah, really patronizing much.
I wonder if she's going to draw her freedom protector out of her freedom protector bra, or out of her freedom protector purse.
See, here's what I would love it if some trans people had guns when they were being attacked. Because why? They're trans people. I would love it if they could protect themselves because, especially trans people of color. I forget the numbers, but the rate of murder of trans people is so ridiculous. And of course, most of the times their perpetrators aren't punished to the full extent of the law because, that's not a hate crime. You didn't beat up on somebody or kill somebody just because they're transgender. My personal favorite is the one when the guy, says, "Oh, I didn't know that they were trans." Bullshit. You just got caught. And therefore, now that person has to die.
Oh, by the way, you got a note from Martha in Florida. She says, "The frackers don't care if they poison all the groundwater. They're counting on human innovation to find another source, i.e. they plan on draining the ocean with desalinization next. And besides, they won't live long enough to suffer the consequences. By the way, you can only go to your doc and ask for any drug you want if you are over age 35 or so. My 22-year-old son has suffered from excruciating chronic back pain since childhood, from scoliosis, herniated and bulging discs, and no one will give him a prescription for anything stronger than prescription-strength Motrin, which doesn't work."
Oh, because he's a drug seeker.
Yeah, right, and it's Florida. I mean, we had codeine carpools that would leave West Virginia, drive to Florida, load up at a pill mill, and come back here.
Wow. Well, you know, and she's right, because I'm over 35, and even because when I was younger, I went to the hospital with horrible pains in to the emergency room, and of course, I was like 18, 19, I was just at Texas State. And of course, well, you know, I was drug seeking, and of course I wasn't, because I actually had two ovarian cysts the size of softball. And that's why I was in pain, but you know, I was drug seeking because I'm black. And I guess, you know, you get to a certain age, I'm almost 50, and you just kind of get ignored. And they figure, you know, well, obviously she did something wrong because she wouldn't be here otherwise. Yeah. I love this country. It's like everybody assumes the worst about people, and then they try, then they start, it's like, well, obviously you're drug seeking because nobody that age could be in pain.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I learned a little bit about it. You know, when my gut goes south, getting relief in West Virginia is near impossible.
Well, my mother goes through the same thing in North Carolina, and I said, "Well, nobody told you to move there."
Well, you know, hillbilly. You know, we can be hillbillies can be trusted with guns, just not pills.
Just not pills.
Because we will chew them up for the refreshing burst of flavor. We will.
Now I have a okay. So, you know, back to that little silly thing called background checks, and one of my theories was the reasoning behind why so many, especially, you know, people in your part of, in your neck of the woods that are on, you know, disability because of a mental, you know, health issue. They don't want any background checks, because if you do a background check and see, well, you're on disability because, you know, you can't take care of yourself, you can't work, and all this. So, and if you're mentally incompetent, then why the hell do you need a gun? You can't have a gun.
Yeah, but the NRA wants them to. I remember that. You know, remember that story that Carol had a month or so back. The parents of the mentally ill woman went to the gun store after she bought one gun, and said, "Listen, she's mentally ill. You know she's mentally ill. Please, if she comes back in here to buy another gun, don't sell her a gun." So when she went back in, they said, "Sure, we'll sell you a gun," and she took the gun home and killed her father. Meanwhile, Dogman asks, have we all learned by now that the herb heals and is good for hangovers and drug addiction? Apparently, no.
Look,
haven't. No.
Like I said, when I had my brain surgery, the only thing, now I had morphine, I had Demerol, I had Percocet, I had all the high octane, you know, opiates. The only thing the morphine did was make me itch. I was scratching like a crack house. All right? Yeah, I get it. And nothing. My best friend brought me some weed. I smoked a joint, and I was like, okay. Now, they had just cracked open my head, and none of the pharmaceutical, you know, that big farm that, you know, is pushing on this work. But a couple of tilts off of a joint, and I was fine. Gee. Wonder why Big Pharma doesn't want, you know, how many lobbyists do you think?
Big Pharma doesn't want that for the same reason Big Oil doesn't want wind and solar. They cannot control the source.
And plus, Big Pharma, and who else doesn't want, tobacco, from what I'm hearing, they're probably looking into, aren't they doing tests to find, because, you know, if you can roll it and smoke it, they're going to want a piece of the pie. So that's
probably, well, I mean,
you know,
imagine, who is it, Altria or whatever that used to be, that used to be Philip Morris? I mean, they've already got Marlboros. They get into legal weed, and they can have Marleys.
Yes. Yes. I mean,
yeah, see.
I don't understand. Like I said, you know, like you said, Big Pharma is doing their damnedest to make sure that we does not become legal federally. But like I said, when I go, I don't drive at night anymore because Jan's freaks her up, so I don't drive at night anymore. But I had stopped driving, you know, a while ago because I can't stand drunk people. I can't stand it. And then, because I'd rather deal with somebody. First of all, somebody high on marijuana, chances are they're not even going to leave the house anyway. Because they're so stoned. And if they do leave the house, the worst thing they're going to do is go for, a munching run or what have you. Dealing with drunk people, them throwing up in your cab, my favorite was the one that had no idea where he lived. And insisted that I knew where he lived. And I'm like, I don't know where you live. And if you don't tell me where you it's like, I'm a lot of things, but clairvoyant is not one of them. Mind reader, soothsayer, whatever. Don't know it, can't help you out. I need to know where you live. Because basically I'm like, well, if you don't tell me where you live, I'm just going to drop you off at the police station because I don't have time for this. I've had people pass out and throw up in my... I had some assholes. I didn't even know you...
Yeah, this isn't like calling the Psychic Friends Network and they ask you for your credit card number and you go, well, you're the psychic.
Right. Now, that's what you... Ooh, see, that's what we should do. We should call a psychic and say, hey, would they ask for the credit card number? Oh, well, don't you know it?
I'm thinking of a number.
I picked up a gypsy who wanted to trade the a palm reading or a tarot reading for the cab fare. My response was, well, you're not a very good fortune teller. She's like, why? I said, because had you been a better fortune teller, you would have known what the answer was going to be. And she looked at me, I'm like, you will be paying. I don't care about
Yeah. Well, Tracy, at least you know now why it was that your name was brought into conversation. Maybe we'll start a pool on how long till Tracy buys the standalone smoker.
Well, you know, it'll probably be before my birthday party because now I'm thinking that I have to smoke at least one or two pork shoulders and have pulled pork sandwiches.
Yes, yes. Or if you and there's got to be somewhere in Greater Los Angeles where you can get homemade sausages, you know, natural casings, yeah. All of that. And now not cook, but smoke to slowly over the barest warmth to slowly hickory smoke some good homemade sausages. Whoa.
Well, believe it or not, our local Ralph's, Kroger to you or whomever, they make their own sausage. In the casings and everything.
Yeah. Now, thinking about something more boutique-y, you know, where somebody's really pouring, you know, pouring.
Well, if I look hard enough, I'm pretty sure, like you said, I live in Los Angeles. There's somebody, but see, at Ralph's, I'll get points.
Yeah, it's all about the points. I was so proud of myself. I saved my points from my one little convenience store, and at the end of every month, I get basically a free tank of gas. So,
doesn't add up like that for me.
I got almost 20 gallons of fuel on the 31st day of May for $1.88. And once again, my Scottish ancestors rejoiced in the afterlife.
Well, see, what Texas, see here, we could, you know, you either get 10 cents off for 100 points, or 20 cents off for 200 points. So I wish I could accumulate, because I would probably, you know, I'm always at the store. But now that you've given me all these ideas, Bob, about what to do, and I'm going. So yeah, you're gonna have to email me the list of the smokers to buy. So now this has become now. It is now. I am enlisting or asking the Horn family to help Tracy find the best smoker she could possibly find without, you know, taking out a second mortgage on my house. But yeah, I really, 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 really want a smoker now. Because
at least around my big box stores, the best one I've seen is that Oklahoma Joe. So look for that heavy gauge
Oklahoma
steel.
Joe.
Yeah,
because I'm tasting. Oh, so funny, because I was at the store and I yesterday at Ralph's, and I'm looking and they have firewood. And I don't think it's been popping to my head when you're talking about having to go on the stroll to get really good wood for smoking. And I just started kind of giggling to myself as I'm walking down to the grocery store. And I'm pretty sure the people that were next to me were like, why is that crazy black woman laughing at herself? Oh, God.
Nah, it's Los Angeles. Everybody does that. I mean, at least that's what the rest of us think.
Well, no. Well, see, there's parts of town where that is accepted and expected. Not so much in Encino. It's so funny because I was at the store yesterday, and I saw a checker that has been my checker, one of the checkers that I've dealt with for the last, you know, 20 some odd years at my Ralph, where I used to live. And I'm like, didn't you work at the Burbank? Oh, and she's like, yeah, but they transferred me here. And I'm like, well, how are you liking it? She's like, yeah. I said, I know. She's a sister. So we just did that. Yeah, I know. Because, I mean, even though there's, you know, kind of upper middle classy parts of Sherman Oaks, where that store happened to be was basically one side is Sherman Oaks and the other side is Van Nuys and, you know, normal people. And Sherman Oaks, that part of Sherman Oaks where I live was the Hoyt Malloy part of Sherman Oaks. It was, you know, solidly middle class. So it's a whole different thing. But this route is called Ventura Boulevard and it's closer to the boulevard. So there's, you know, you got the people who live in Encino who are coming down the hill to go to the grocery store. So it's a whole different vibe.
Yeah, no, the neighborhood makes all the difference in the world.
The neighborhood makes all the difference in the world. And so I mean,
like, the Kroger's in the middle of Charleston is, or was, I don't even know if it's still there anymore, radically different from the one out in South Hills where the people of quality live.
Right, and it's like that here. I mean, you go to a route that, you know, like in Van Nuys or North Hollywood or what have you, far different. And I've done that, and I'm just like, wow, what a difference. Well, again, it's like I'm used to driving miles and miles in South L.A. and not running across one grocery store. And when I did go into a grocery store, the quality of the food, I never forget the first time after I moved from L.A. to the Valley, and I went into a Ralph, and it just amazed me. The difference of the quality of food and the abundance and all this. And I'm like, wow. But it's no different than, you know, me going to school. I was fortunate. I never went to school in South L.A. as far as high school to elementary school. I was in kindergarten, so that didn't count. But when I was going to school and to go from, I had to take summer courses at Locke High School in my going from my senior year in high school. And the difference, Chatsworth, we could walk, there was no gates around the school. It was an open campus. You could walk on and off the campus. I go to Lockett, it was like being in a prison. And so you look at these differences, and I'm like, So why would it be any different, you know, if they treat us like this because, you know, well, black people don't matter, so we're going to look them up. And then, of course, why would we give them healthy food and, you know, different choices for groceries instead of, you know, just junk and leftover food? It never ceases to amaze me, the inequality, you know, how one place can be just one so nice, and it's the same store. It's like going to the same thing like going to the bank. I've gone to bank, you know, my branch, I bank at, you know, God help me, I bank with B of A, but I go to the B of A in my neighborhood, one or two people, if there's more than three people in a line, they open, another teller comes and opens up a window. You go to the one in South L.A., and you're waiting. There's only like one
or
two
people
in the line.
Yeah, they don't care. They do. No, they don't care.
They don't care. They don't care. Or there's the one ATM that works or what have you. It is utterly ridiculous. Absolutely, positively ridiculous. But, you know, people, when people feel you don't matter, to me, it's like, if you are, and I say stuff when I do go, when I have occasions when I'm in L.A. and I actually have to go to a bank, and I go off. I'm just like, really? My money is, their money here. I said, why is it that when I go to my branch in Sherman Oaks, I'm in and out in 10 minutes, but here it's 30 minutes, and it's the same bank. Why is their money?
Different operating philosophy. The people, well, the people who bank there matter.
Right.
And it's they know that it's pathetic that it's that way, but that's, you know, that's the reality of marketing and the biases that are inherent therein. Hey, Tracy, I got to roll along just to wrap things up for the end of the night, but I'm awfully glad Todd conjured you, and I'm awfully glad that you in turn are in, you're in sync with the whole philosophy.
Yes. I don't know if depending on how I feel tomorrow after with all the hoopla after the primary, you'll probably hear it from me crying. Well, see, the thing is, we won't know anything because
I'll go off the air at 6 p.m. y'all's time. Polls will still be open. And of course, the lines will probably be around the block for anyone who wants to, who lives somewhere that might vote for Bernie. But you know, that's American democracy.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least we don't have voter identification laws out here. Thank goodness for that.
Nope. Well, Tracy, have yourself a lovely evening, dear.
I will, and you do as well.
All right. Take care. Bye now. The lady cab driver. That's our dear friend Tracy. Conjured by Todd earlier this evening. Thanks going out to Steve and Karen in Georgistan. Thank you very kindly indeed. Chris's challenge for the evening now has only $60 to go. $60 remaining. 6 at 10, 10 at 6, 5 at 12, 12 at 5, 1 at 60, 2 at 30, 3 at 20, 4 at 15, 8 at 5. Getting to, I don't know. You know, I think this is good for my math skills or something. I don't know. We had a follow-up. Had a follow-up from our buddy Andy in regard to his email. He said, I give you credit for reading my rambling grammatically English language challenging piece. No excuses, but I was a math major for a reason. Oh, that's the same, that's why I was an English major. I can't do the math. My math reads, never thought you'd read it. I'm hanging out on the San Francisco Bay after having my teeth worked on at UCSF. Maybe I'm still a bit not with it. Even after having one's teeth worked on, that sounds like a lovely afternoon. Grand jury or charge regarding Hillary, the damage is done. It's the perception. It's the perception, and I agree. I have yet to figure out how the thought processes whereby someone figures out that it's a good idea to nominate as one's candidate for the presidency someone with the highest unfavorability ratings of any Democratic presidential candidate since maybe, what, Al Smith? Or, McClellan in 1864? Yeah. On the surface, it looks bad to the voting populace. Under the iceberg, at the top, it leaves the mind to wonder how Team Clinton enriched themselves with the 1% charitable foundation quid pro quo. What deals were cut, we can't investigate. No FOIA. Innocence, maybe not in the court of public opinion. Please. I agree with you. Indictment under Mr. Obama's AG, Loretta Lynch? No. No guts corporate Democrat president will go to bat for the Clintons Corporation. Yeah. Mr. No Guts corporate Democratic president will go to bat for the Clintons, corporations, and the 1%, while progressives will be attacked and be damned. Mr. Obama has treated the working class with disdain. You're correct. I screwed up the Debs quote. Forgot the don't. It only took me a minute. The slack you're giving is admitting you'll vote for the people that ripped the heart and guts out of the Democratic Party, the New Deal. That's where I get the slack. I'm with Malloy. I can't vote for these Dems anymore. Tell Todd, yes, life is tough in modern-day America, and it's not going to get any better whoever wins. I'm just referring to voting for Mrs. Clinton again, the people that destroyed so many working-class lives. You're the man, still listening. Don't catch every show, but not that much time to comment. Thanks, Andy. Thank you, Andy. And Andy adds, you know, this is not our father's Democratic Party. With the Clintons, you're not voting for the Rooseveltian legacy. My father, similar to yours, cut his 19-year-old teeth in the engine room deep in the hull of an aircraft carrier. The Valley Forge during World War II. You like to say the best thing your country ever did for you was Social Security. And it's the truth. I mean, there are those of us who exist on this planet today because our forebears did not starve to death during the Depression as Herbert Hoover, had he been granted another term, would gladly have let the country do. We literally, lives are owed to the legacy of FDR. And I don't like the fact that Mrs. Clinton strikes me as someone who is far more in line with Barry Goldwater and Ronald Reagan and Richard Nixon. I mean, she is, after all, buddies, not just acquaintances, but buddies with Nixon's national security advisor. And later, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger. You can't get around that, and that is, you know, that's a moral wall I run up against. And say as you will, however you will, for how I vote, but I have my reasons for voting the way I'm going to vote in November. And one of them is so that when those thin-skinned, pissy hilarians say, well, the only reason she didn't win was because of the Bernie people. No, sister. I voted for her. I encouraged others to do the same thing. This is a personal responsibility matter. Because I'm still not convinced that she won't lose to T-Rump. And, you know, I'm not in the camp with the creator of Dilbert, Scott Adams, put up some blog post in the last day or two where he said that he was going to support Hillary because he was afraid that Hillary's supporters would kill him if he didn't. Really, really, honest to goodness, no kidding, there was no snark in this. He says that, you know, he thinks the Hillary people would murder him. Because that stuff is still running around. The MENA airport and the Clinton Chronicles and the Trail of Dead, the bloody trail that follows in the wake of wherever Bill and Hillary Clinton go. Yeah, well, bullshit. I mean, there's the Trail of Dead, but it ain't dead people here. It's, you know, it's the million little dead children in Iraq of whom Bill Clinton's Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, said, I think it was worth it, you know, for the million children to die. Of course, the million children didn't get a vote. But I'm voting with my eyes wide open. I am a big old political grown-up. If she loses, I'm gonna be poised to say, well, I did as you asked me. I voted for her. I voted against my conscience. I voted for things that I knew were directly harmful to me and mine. She's still okay with the bombs that go off in Appalachia every day. So don't think that I'm just, please, don't think that I'm just going along to get along. I'm not. I'm not that kind of person. And I'm not abandoning my progressive values. They're still going to be there. And if she performs as I expect her to perform, there will be, as long as this program is on the air, there will be 4 years House Impeachment Committee action notwithstanding, there will be 4 years of opportunities to point out what an opportunity we blew during the primaries of 2016. So that's where we wrap it up this evening. Thank you very kindly to, thank you to Snork for jumping in. We have $50 to go now in fundraising. Only 50 bucks to go. Thank you very kindly for everyone who got us there. Thank you to Chris for the challenge. Thank you to Janie. Thank you to Anonymous. Thank you to Steve and Karen. Thank you, Snork. Thank you, Laurel. Between now and tomorrow, maybe that other 50 will roll in and the challenge will be met. Awesome that we're this close. Oh, and by the way, one last thing. I've seen this several times during the course of the program. Various news outlets are having a hissy over the fact that the Associated Press has declared that Hillary Clinton is now the nominee. How the hell did the Clinton team get that story placed? Because, of course, the Associated Press is counting superdelegates. And they don't get to vote until the convention. Shh. Doesn't matter what they say between now and then. The voting is what matters. Just, you know, saying. So that's it. Titanic Tuesday tomorrow, and I have a feeling it's going to be a rollicking good time, as they always are. You know, we can sit here and just scream quietly to ourselves and maybe take some of the starch out of watching an empire die. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Lottie, happy birthday, Lottie. And Sparky, thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, everybody.